At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
The economic news of the day in one word, and that word is what? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Friday of a very big deal economic week, the third day of February today. Good as always to have you along, everybody. 517,000, that is jobs, 3.4%, that is the rate. And Jay Powell saying out loud in almost this many words, yeah, sure looks like inflation's calming down. Disinflation is technically the word he used, so to it we will get. Gina Smilex at the New York Times, Heather Long is at the Washington Post. Hey, you two.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Gina, we'll start with you, and we'll start with the jobs report. And I'm not kidding when I say my first reaction this morning was, wow, and then my second reaction was, what? And that's spelled W-U-T. What's going on with the labor market in this economy?
Yeah, that is a great question that I think we'll have to wait till the next jobs report to find out. I think the big takeaway here is crazy strong economy, crazy strong job market. You know, these numbers were really good. We kind of dug through every special factor we could think of today, and it still looked like these numbers were really good. You know, 517,000 is a very big job gain. 3.4% unemployment is the lowest since 1969. You know, we're talking about a very, very strong hiring situation. I think the mystery here is why wages are continuing to decelerate at the same time that we're seeing job growth like this. You know, we saw wage growth pull back a little bit, not as much as economists had expected this month, but, you know, you didn't see what you would have expected at 3.4% unemployment, which is a big pop in wages as people, you know, competed for workers. And so I think we don't really know the answer to why that square isn't quite squaring yet. And I think we'll have to wait and see more data to try and figure that out.
Heather, you get the much tougher follow-on now, which is to you know, go to what Gina was saying. Why are wages still, you know, not doing what one would think that they are doing, would be doing?
Well, it's sure a Goldilocks job report and economy that we're all still trying to figure out. I think on the wage side, it's such a funny period with wages, where they were obviously up so much a year ago, and we're starting to see layoffs in the tech industry and the media industry, but there's still all these help wanted signs up in the hospitality sector, which led the job gains last month. So you really kind of have to go industry by industry on this. And when we look at the aggregate wage growth, it's slowing down and still at that 4.4%. But I think when you start to dig industry by industry, you really see this tilting story of some industries like hospitality are very desperate and still have pretty high wage growth. Other industries like the white collar and the tech sector that hired so much in 2021 are now cooling their jets and definitely not offering big pay hikes.
But look, Gina, here's the deal. This was the eighth rate increase from the Federal Reserve this year. Jay Powell is doing all he can to slow this labor market, and he cannot. And granted, they're bound by their dual mandate, but is it time for the Fed to start thinking about trying something else, whatever that may be?
You know, I think this what is most likely here is that they're going to stay the course and keep raising interest rates in the next couple of months as they try and figure out what happens next with this job market. You know, I think they're going to hope that some of the rate increases that they've already made, which, you know, pushed interest rates from near zero this time last year to more than 4.5%, are going to slowly filter through the economy and hit this job market. I mean, I was talking to a macroeconomist at Harvard today, and he was saying, you know, you would have expected that to happen already at these levels. You know, all of our models would suggest this shouldn't be happening, but clearly it is happening. So I think it's just going to be a story of additional adjustment on the part of the Fed. Unfortunately for them, you know, they kind of have one tool. It's a hammer. Right. So they just have to kind of treat the situation like it's a nail.
Heather, do you think it's time to stop talking about a soft landing? Because as far as the labor market's concerned, there is no landing going on here at all.
I know. It sort of feels like a crazy discussion how to describe what's going on right now. It defies all economics, introductory economics classes that many of us took in college, where they told us it really can't happen like this. You can't have inflation coming down and still have a jobs market that's this hot and this roaring. So whatever you want to call it, I noticed that Chair Powell avoided using the word landing at all in his remarks. This week. It's certainly a pretty hopeful environment. You even saw in this jobs report temporary help, which we had all been talking about, how temporary help had been going down at the end of last year. Suddenly there's 26,000 more temporary hires. So no matter where you look, it was strength to strength.
So, look, we're going to end here with another version of my favorite game. What is Jay Powell thinking in five words or less? But this is a much more than five-word answer, Gina. And, Heather, I know you hate the whole five words limit, so we're not going to play that today. But I do want to know, Gina, what you think Jay Powell is thinking today, or actually last night when he got these jobs numbers. What do you think he said to himself?
Oh, boy. I think
that was it. I bet that's what he said, right?
Yeah. I think he's probably trying to figure out what this wage deceleration means. I mean, on one hand, you could tell this really optimistic story where, you know, maybe workers are just going to come back and we're going to see a situation where we get a lot more labor in the economy, which means it can grow at a faster pace and inflation can slow and like all the good things we've been talking about for a while now could kind of happen and inflation could decelerate and you end up with this miraculous soft landing. And then Jay Powell looks like, you know, if Alan Greenspan was the maestro, Jay Powell looks like a guy who, like, you know, I don't know, the maestro's boss, I guess.
Right.
But I think you could also end up with a situation that's much less positive out of this, where they have to really sort of crack down on the job market. Right. And I don't think we know the answer yet.
Okay, wait, play that out for a little bit. What does it look like if things go south from here, Gina?
Yeah, you know, I think if things go south from here, it could look pretty bad, actually. It could look like a situation where the Fed has to really raise interest rates later this year, maybe more aggressively, and really try and rein in this labor market, which is obviously going to cool down the whole rest of the economy in the process. And so you could see them having to inflict a lot more pain to try and get wages and inflation to come down.
Heather, your turn. What do you think Jay Powell thought last night when he saw these numbers?
I'll just say, roughing off Gina, if Alan Greenspan was the maestro, I think Jay Powell would like to be the magician. He would like to do the unthinkable here. But I think his main thought right now is wait and see, wait and see, wait and see, find ways to give the Fed more flexibility. There's been a lot of head fakes in the last year about whether inflation was coming down or not, or what was happening in the job market. And as Kai, as you like to remind everyone, 1 month does not make a trend.
There you go. 1 month's data. That's true. And Powell says that all the time. Heather Long at the Washington Post, Gina Smilek at the New York Times. What a week it was. Thanks, you two. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
On Wall Street today, a down note to end this big economic week. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We were talking, my boss and I, before our news meeting this morning about what else we could say about this morning's blowout jobs report after I talked it over with Heather and Gina that would maybe add a little context. And she said, my boss did, you know, it's been a while since we've done a bond market story. And I said, that's true. It's been a good long while. And then Sabri jumped on the Zoom and my boss said, hey, Sabri, guess what?
Bonds are like a gallon of milk. Milk has to last a week. A 10-year bond has to last for 10 years, which means it has to offer a competitive return for 10 years, or else it will look rotten. Well, those yields had to go up this morning to stay competitive, and that is because investors now believe interest rates in the future will go up more than they thought. So why did that happen? Let's start with the jobs report.
Why the jobs report is so important right now is that what it tells us about the wage growth outlook.
Jake Jolly is a senior investment strategist at BNY Mellon Investment Management. So many job openings and so few unemployed people means the labor market is tight.
And this results in an imbalance between supply and demand for labor. And the way that you balance that market is essentially by paying higher wages.
Which, don't get me wrong, we all want to get paid more, but
if they're rising too quickly, then that can influence levels of inflation throughout the economy.
Mark Cabana is head of U.S. rate strategy at Bank of America Securities. Inflation in services is the big concern right now, and therefore so are the wages of workers providing services. Simon Harvey heads foreign exchange analysis with Monex Europe.
It's not just a monstrous headline employment figure that we had today, but if we actually scratch beneath the surface, job gains were primarily concentrated in non-housing services, which is the area where the Fed has its biggest inflation problem to date.
So these massive jobs numbers are a sign that maybe inflation is going to make a slower exit than they thought. Here's Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics.
And investors are thinking that this might put additional pressure on the Federal Reserve to continue pushing up interest rates and keeping rates higher for longer.
This is what the Fed has been saying for a while now, that it was too early to declare victory on inflation. But a lot of bond investors weren't buying it, says Simon Harvey. He says investors were making bets that the Fed would pause and then even lower rates this year.
The jobs data really knocked them back in line.
So long story short, the jobs numbers made bond investors suddenly realize, oh, maybe inflation might take a little longer to deal with than we thought. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Harley-Davidson had a pretty good close to the 2022 motorcycle year. Shipments globally were up 18% in the fourth quarter over a year earlier. Less good, though, was the news for LiveWire. That's Harley's electric motorcycle business. Revenue there down 28%. Harley did actually spin LiveWire out into a separate entity last year, still owns most of it, though. But look, the all-electric Hummer and the all-electric Ford F-150, they're flying off the shelves. Electric cars of all varieties, basically the same. Demand for electric scooters is strong, too. What, though, is different about electric motorcycles? Marketplace's Matt Levin has this one.
When the Tobacco Road Harley-Davidson dealership in Raleigh, North Carolina, was carrying LiveWire bikes a couple years ago, there were customers who wanted to check them out. Casey Harold is the dealership's marketing manager.
They see how fast it is, how nimble it is, how easy it is to shift.
But for true Harley lovers, there was often a deal breaker.
They miss the sound. They want that rumble. They want it to make that noise when they're coming down the road.
While Ford can market its all-electric pickup truck to traditional pickup drivers, there's just less overlap between LiveWire and Harley riders, says analyst Anna Glaskin at Jefferies.
The person who is buying a Harley Davidson, everyone can picture in their mind, is not necessarily the same person who's going to gravitate toward an electric, sportier type of bike.
In 2021, more than a third of people who bought electric motorcycles were new to motorcycling, according to the Motorcycle Industry Council. The electric market overall is growing, led mostly by non-legacy brands like Zero Motorcycles. But there's some strong headwinds, like literal headwinds.
We call it the meat flag.
Seth Weintraub is the publisher at the EV news site Electra. He says the human riding the motorcycle is a big aerodynamic drag, which strains the electric battery.
At highway speeds, no real motorcycle gets much more than 100 miles of range.
Those range-draining meat flags mean electric motorcycles aren't great for joyriding down the coast on the weekends. They're better for urban day trips, which then means
you're competing with e-bikes.
Or scooters, which are typically cheaper and don't require a special license to operate. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Coming up.
There have been a lot of things we've tried and then tried over again.
If at first you don't succeed, y'all know the rest, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's off 127 points today, about 0.4%, 33,926. The NASDAQ down 193, 1.6%, 12,006. The S&P 500 declined 43 points, about 1%. 41.36 there. For the week, the Dow off 0.2%. The NASDAQ climbed 3.3%. S&P 500, 1.6% to the good. We got a bunch of earnings reports after the bell yesterday. Amazon put out weaker than expected guidance for the current quarter and fell back 8.4% today. Alphabet missed on earnings per share and revenue and gave back 0.2% today. Apple disappointed on profit and revenue, but picked up 2.4% just because. Ford fell short of expectations and its own guidance, and today lost 7.6%. Matt was telling you about Harley Davidson and electric motorcycles. Today, Harley shares traded under the ticker symbol. We've done this before, right? You guys know this? H-O-G, hog. Dipped 0.8%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. A little bit, or maybe more than a little bit actually, of the shine has come off crypto the past year or so. Yes, sure, Bitcoin's up something like 40% since the beginning of the year, but the implosion of FTX, the still deeply speculative nature of cryptocurrency, the regulatory uncertainty, it is risky in crypto right now, and a disproportionate amount of that risk is being borne by black investors. According to the Ariel Schwab Black Investor Survey out last year, a quarter of black Americans own crypto compared to 15% of white investors. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports on why that is.
For Terry Bradford, she first started noticing the crypto ads when a lot of us did, during last year's Super Bowl, especially the one with LeBron James talking to his younger self.
Is the hype too much? Am I ready?
I can't tell you everything, but if you want to make history, you got to call your own shots.
And then Bradford, a payments specialist at the Kansas City Federal Reserve, noticed that a lot of the ads seemed very targeted to black audiences.
You could see that, you know, Spike Lee was promoting crypto, and you would hear about it in terms of athletes that began taking their salaries in crypto.
And Bradford saw the influence of those ads in surveys about just who was getting into crypto. According to the Ariel Schwab Black Investor Survey, for some respondents, cryptocurrencies were the first investment product they ever purchased.
So black investors are basically twice as likely to say that crypto was their first investment, 11% compared to only 4% of white investors.
Arielle Patrick is with Ariel Investments. She says a lot of those black investors, according to the survey, may not have known quite what they were getting into.
Almost half of our respondents, so more than 4 in 10, reported that they invested in something that they didn't actually fully understand. And black investors are actually more than twice as likely to expect an extraordinary return.
Some of that boils down to differences in access to financial education. But Terry Bradford at the Kansas City Fed found additional reasons why black investors were more likely to get into crypto.
The wealth gap was a major consideration in all of this, as was distrust of traditional financial services.
Because for much of American history, black people have had limited access to institutions like banks and the stock market. Crypto was a way to get around that system.
And there was a cultural component that was becoming evident in terms of what we were seeing, how crypto was being marketed to black consumers.
Bradford says messages that crypto was a good way to quickly build wealth were everywhere. In TV ads, on social media. Crypto promotions even showed up in music lyrics, like in this song by Takeoff and Rich the Kid, called, appropriately, Crypto.
Why did it split up with crypto?
Let's go. She want the info.
She do.
I want to talk about crypto.
Dan Runcie is the founder of Trapital, which covers the business of hip-hop. He says there's a reason these messages resonated in the black community.
There's a broader exposure of who are the people that a lot of folks in our community look up to historically for years, and it's more likely to over-index on athletes and entertainers than it may be for white folks or people from other backgrounds.
And it wasn't just celebrities. It felt for a while like everyone knew somebody who was doing well in crypto.
Once I got convinced, I turned $2,500 into about $80,000 in less than a year.
Randy Payton is an automotive writer and marketing consultant who lives just outside of Washington, D.C. He says he got involved in crypto via tokens and metaverse projects. I met him at a December event billed as an informational session about blockchain, where we heard what turned out to be a multi-level marketing presentation.
We're moving from a paper world, which is fiat currency controlled by banks and governments, to a digital world. In the wealth transfer, they're going to be winners and they're going to be losers.
Held in a suburban library, the crowd of about 30 people was entirely black, and many in the audience appeared ready to invest. Despite the crypto crash and the headlines and the scandals and the horror stories, some investors, like Randy Payton, still have faith in crypto and the technology behind it.
Blockchain gives us the opportunity to finance our own projects. Once this thing catches on, you don't have to worry about the banks, the middleman.
But crypto's success as an economic equalizer is still anything but certain. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Coming next week from Kimberly, how some of those same things that got black investors to jump into crypto can also work to push them into other risky investments and sometimes just outright scams. We started the show with jobs. We approach the end of the show with jobs, in particular, jobs in the sporting goods, hobby, musical instrument, book, and miscellaneous retailers category. That's actually the BLS title, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Added 700 jobs, that category did, into which falls Garrity Tools. They make pottery tools in St. Louis, Missouri. We talked to Colin Garrity last year, the then owner of the company, about his plans to change it from sole proprietorship to a worker co-op. And we got him back on the phone the other day to see how it's going.
The transition into a worker co-op has been slow, and we've been making it up as we go. There have been a lot of things we've tried and then tried over again. At first, it was me building this thing, and I didn't have to be right or wrong. I would just make a decision. But now, especially because everyone cares, all these decisions need to be made by the stakeholders, which is the worker owners, but is also everyone. That's been really overwhelming because we're figuring out what pay structure looks like within a co-op, but we're also trying to figure out how to have a company in 2023 that makes things and sells them. And that's just pretty tough. It's been a lot of learning. Becoming a co-op hasn't fixed any of the challenges the company has on its own. We're still a manufacturing business in St. Louis. We're answering big questions like, does everyone get paid the same? Or is there a scale? And do we just pay market rates for different jobs? And our biggest challenge is trying to figure out how to make it a good job for everyone. And no amount of, company ownership makes up for a bad job. I think it's still worth it to make this switch, and it's a little too late to not. A couple of people have asked me that recently, I think because I've been more stressed now than when I owned the company by myself. I love my job. I love creating businesses and designing products that people want, but it's really awesome to give people jobs that they love. And if everyone hates their job and we're a worker-owned co-op, then it's not worth it. I think we're going to get this right, but we're learning and we're going to keep trying pretty weird things. I think we're finally figuring out how to shape this into something that can keep growing. And if we can find out how to make this a healthy job for people and still pay everyone, then it's definitely worth it.
Colin Garrity there, worker owner, figuring it all out at Garrity Tools in St. Louis, Missouri. This final note on the way out today, of interest, I am sure, to my kids, the older ones anyway, even though they don't listen to this, maybe of interest to your family too. Did you see the other day reports that Netflix was rolling out new rules about password sharing, basically that you can't anymore? Yeah, never mind. The company now says those rules were posted in error and that they only apply to a password non-sharing pilot program Netflix has going on in Chile, Costa Rica, and Peru. So kids, you ought to listen to the program. You're good for now. All right, we're going. Here, though, is your moment of economic context, and we haven't touched on this in a while. That's on me. The overall unemployment rate in this economy, as we said earlier, 3.4% and historic low. For black Americans last month, 5.4%. Down, though, about 0.3%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Pargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.